Blog Talk Radio.
Your host is Sandy Rogers, and I thank you for being with us tonight on Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. And, you know, I'll be so geeked and hyped up on Tuesdays. Man, I've been up since 3:30 this morning, like, come on, 9 o'clock, come on, 9 o'clock. No, but I thank you for being with us tonight. We're going to have a really, really good time with Assistant Pastor Pedro Silva is in the house with us tonight, and I'm going to be bringing him on shortly. But you know how we do it here at Life, Love, and Wellness. We always start by anchoring ourselves first in an affirmative reading so that we just kind of calm ourselves down just a little bit, and we all are starting off on the same energy. So today's inspirational message is called Sacred Communion. Solid time with the Creator. It may be morning, noon, or night. Sacred communion is time spent listening to your indwelling higher consciousness that is always present. Sacred communion feeds your soul and your spirit with the spiritual nutrients needed to live a satisfying life. Go inward and commune with God. Enjoy the wonders of hearing the incredible awesomeness of infinite intelligence speak to you. What are your concerns? Are there doubts lingering in your mind about a situation? Need instructions or directions? Or do you just desire to say thank you? You can do all these things and more while in that amazing place of sacred communion. Sacred communion can happen anywhere and anytime. It is a conscious choice. It is the deliberate act of hushing all other thoughts and noise. It is being in a state of oneness with God. It is truly listening and trusting that within you dwells the spirit of the source of all life. I dedicate time to being in sacred and harmony. I have faith that I have a direct line of communication with God. I go to that place as often as necessary. I know I can call on and be answered by my heavenly master. Thanks, God, for this faster than the speed of light connection with you. I am blessed with all of my answers. I know the answers may not come in my time. I desire for your will to be done and manifested in my life. So I wait joyously. I give thanks for sacred communion. And again, that's from my daily post, revsandy.wordpress.com. And you can go on there, and the messages are posted every day. And if you desire to subscribe to those daily thoughts, they'll be delivered directly into your email on a daily basis by 5 a.m. So once we center ourselves, time, and to acknowledge, invoke, and invite the spirits and the energies of our ancestors to be with us. And on tonight, I have two new ancestors to add to our list. They both made transition in the state of Texas over the last 48 hours or so. We have Betsy Matthews from out of Houston and Gloria Faye Sanders. And I believe she also lived in Houston, but I know she definitely lived in Texas. So we honor those two souls that have made that transition into the ancestors' realm, and we pay tribute to them as we do all our ancestors, and we treasure the gifts of our ancestors because they're still directing and guiding us even from the other side. So we love you, we bless you, we appreciate you. Ashe, ashe, ashe. So it's all about life, all about love, and it's all about wellness. Tonight's show is called Transforming Emotional Trauma with Minister Pedro Silva. And Pedro is one of my godsons, and I'm so proud and so happy that he has the time to join with us. He has a brand new baby at home, so he has two little beautiful girls now. So we're going to get right into him and let him share with us the gifts that God has bestowed upon him and let him share his heart with us. But I want to dedicate this song to Pedro and his family, especially his two girls, just so that we all get to be in the same energy with him. So I'm going to play this song, and then I'm going to tell you a little story behind the tune when we come back. So, Pedro, this is for you and the girls.
All of heaven loves me. You're an angel in the flesh. When those words came through, when you
that was my nephew, Anthony A.K. King, and his daughter, my great niece, Crystal, singing a daughter and daddy duet. And so I just thought that that would be so appropriate to kind of start the show off tonight. So, audience, you know you're always invited to join in the discussions with us live on air, and all comments are always welcomed, and every voice will be heard with complete acceptance. There's never any judgment here on Life, Love, and Wellness. And so if you're not on the line with us, you may call in at 516-531-9819, and when you press 1, that alerts me that you want to speak live on air. So you are listening currently to Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. And tonight we have with us Pedro Silva. He's an assistant pastor, minister, husband, father. He's a blogger. And to me, the most important thing, he's my godson. He's a gifted writer. He's a spiritual force to be reckoned with and a powerful truth teller. And he's on a very, very special assignment in this universe, and I'm going to let him tell that story. But Pedro, I did meet him here while he lived in Atlanta. I believe he's been gone about 10 or 11, maybe even 12 years now. But we've maintained contact with one another, and I tell you, I really love this young man and what he's doing in the universe, the peaceful resolve that he brings to situation as they happen around him. So I just want to make sure that I honor him in totality because he truly is a teacher for all of us, young and old, all cultures, everyone that he comes in contact with. And I know that for his family, his wife and his two daughters, that he is a sincere blessing for them as well. So I want to bring Pedro on. I'm going to read from two of his posts as we go along a little bit later in the show. But I want to make sure that I respect his time. Again, his baby is not even a month old yet, I believe. And so I want to respect that in the household. And so let's see. Pedro Silva, are you with us tonight?
Yes, I'm with you. I appreciate the introduction. I said, oh, man, that's a lot of pressure. But I want to say that, you know, I really appreciate the way that you are able to bring together just every element of your spiritual walk. That's always been an inspiration for me and to me. And ever since we met through Barbara King, I've always appreciated that because, you know, we're all on this journey. We're all constantly growing and developing, some to greater or lesser degrees, but we're all on that trajectory. And to be able to harmonize the different exposures, the different experiences, and the different levels of expression the way you do, I think is a major invitation to all the people that encounter you and encounter the things that you create in the world. So I just want to say that I appreciate that and honor that in you. And for this conversation, my hope is that it will be an invitation to people who are on the line, or people who might hear it later, hear the recording later, that they might receive this conversation as a very expansive conversation that all of us are a part of on a soul level, and that they might find that some inspiration to know more of themselves, but also to become an invitation in the world so that we can kind of grow together through these sacred conversations. So that's my hope for our time together today.
Okay. I think we can accomplish that. Would you like to introduce yourself to the audience? Tell us a little bit about yourself, where you were born and where you grew up, and how your childhood perhaps prepared you for the roles that you're currently playing.
Yeah, definitely. I actually just got back from Virginia a couple of days ago, and that's where I was raised. I was born in Brooklyn. My dad's a Cape Verdean immigrant, you know, to the United States, and my mom is African-American. And basically, I think from the beginning, as long as I can remember, I found myself in situations where I had to kind of be in the middle of things, whether it was the fact that my father didn't really speak English that well in my younger days, and there were obviously not only language challenges but also cultural differences that created some kind of just unrest, you know, because that, and I think that's one of the things that we face as a nation right now is the convergence of so many cultures and the inability to speak across cultures. So I was basically born into that circumstance. And on both sides of my family, they were very open to encountering people from different cultures, which exposed me to a lot. At the same time, you know, I was born in the end of the 70s and in the South, and I spent a lot of time going back and forth between Virginia and Mississippi, and there was already that, you know, that same disease that is still affecting us today of racism has always had a profound effect on me on multiple levels, some of which we might talk about in the course of our conversation. But I was made aware very early of some of the challenges that we face in society based on, I call it the illusion of the divisions that we create based on race, and just finding myself in that middle. And it's still affecting how I function in the world to this day. And also at an early age, people in church used to say that I was going to be a pastor, and I wasn't always 100% sure about that calling that people said that I had. But part of it, one person told me, oh, you know, you're going to be a pastor because you have a preacher's neck, which I have to this day. I don't know what a preacher's neck means, but that's what they told me. I had a preacher's neck and probably a little bit of fat at the back of my neck. I don't know what it is, but they said, you got a preacher's neck. You can be a preacher. Yeah. I heard that. and my mother, my mom was an evangelist from time to time, and my dad had that desire. And so for a while, I wasn't really sure if it was something that I was being called to or if it was something that I just kind of felt that I was being pushed into because I had heard it so much. But as life unfolded, it ended up lining up. So I guess I had to accept that it is a calling. But more than anything, I've come to learn that most of the problems that we have created in our society, they can't be healed. As Einstein said, you can't solve a problem at the same level of thinking you had when you created it. So I think that you have to move into another level. Yeah, another level or another realm. And that's what I've been trying to do all my life. You know, as I encounter the borders of my awareness, of my consciousness, I try to just kind of allow for space for me to encounter people that have different types of thoughts, different levels of knowledge, and as you expressed, like even the influence of our ancestors, to learn and to grow and to just continue to expand. So, I mean, most of the elements of my story are, at least from my perspective, they're of little consequence, except for to the degree that they invites me into expanding. And that's what I'm continuing to do. And I mean, that's what I find important in my story. And obviously having my family has been instrumental. A lot of things I revisit because of my older daughter asking questions, which are continuing to shape me because I learn from her, and I see her also as a teacher that helps me to expand and my consciousness and to challenge me to live into the things that I profess. So that's the trajectory of my story.
And how old and what is your oldest daughter's name?
My oldest daughter's name is Calista. She's 9. Yeah, okay. And she and I went on the trip to Virginia together for the past, because then obviously the baby's just a month old, so we didn't travel with her. But my oldest daughter and I did go to Virginia. And in large part, we went there because with all the things that are going on in the nation right now, I wanted her to be able to have some more exposure to my side of the family. And also, she had been asking me a lot of questions regarding race. And we've been talking about those things pretty candidly, and she's been there to some of the events that I've hosted to have conversations about race. So she's, I want her to, you know, continue to be empowered by these conversations, but I also felt like she needed to spend some more time with my family in Virginia, in that area where I was influenced so much. And then this happened, and they had the rally and all the other tragedy that happened that same weekend that we went there. So that was a whole new set of conversations that we're still processing.
I can imagine. So were you guys like in the traffic flow of it, or?
Yeah, it was we were headed back to the airport. We were basically headed back to the airport that morning of the when the rally was getting set up. So I saw trucks headed that direction with the Confederate flag on it and stuff like that. And my mom was in the car, like, not to, you know, like, oh Lord, these fools. You know, I mean, that's the way she was expressing it. You know what I mean? And my daughter, she expressed that she was, you know, a little bit fearful about it. But then she asked me, like, aren't we supposed to say, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And we talked a little bit about that too. And what does that mean when you see someone who's clearly exhibiting a behavior that looks like it's, you know, clearly malicious intent, but how do you forgive that, you know, consciously? And we talked about it. And obviously it's not like the easiest thing in the world to do, but it's the direction toward, that we're going toward in our spirit.
Yeah, but, you know, with you having such a peaceful resolve in your spirit, that helped your daughter quite a bit because, you know, if you would not have been of that mindset but easily agitated or, you know, because I kind of agree with your mom, like, you know, oh, my God, what is this going on, you know, that she may not have got an answer that she could deal with, you know, and that could have given her some traumas right then, you know, unless you were able to speak truth to her like you did. So my hat goes off to you. You mentioned speaking across cultures as part of what you had to deal with coming up. And I find that really interesting because it's as if nothing's really changed, you know, since the time that you were born till now. I guess things haven't changed since the time I was born until now. So we do and we are always speaking across cultures, and we don't always speak in a tongue where people are understood, you know, on both sides of the equation. And so you can you dig into that a little bit more, or because I really found that interesting and something that we need to do more of, perhaps speaking with the language of love, you know. So,
well, I know that the first awareness I had of it was like there were times where I was aware as a child that my mom and dad were saying the same thing, but because of the language barriers and the cultural perspective, it seemed like they were saying two different things. And I would be like, like he's saying the same thing you're saying, or you're saying the same thing he's saying, but I could understand both of them. And so, and I think like you're going to see a lot more of that in with the generations as people kind of like marry people from different cultures and stuff like that, their children who can understand multiple languages and things like that. They are in that space, you know what I mean, where they are born of two or more cultures, and they actually have some kind of intimate relationship with those cultures and the perspectives that they bring. And one of the things about culture that I'm very aware of is that for most people, they use their cultural lens to kind of determine what's right and wrong. So what I mean by that is, like, if a person comes from a culture where, let's say they come from a culture where people dress in a certain way, or maybe they dance in a certain way, and then someone else might see that same culture and say, and judge the way that those people might dress or judge the way they dance as being inappropriate, but from that other person's cultural context, it's normative. You know what I mean? And so
Mm-hmm.
When we encounter different cultures, a lot of times it really goes down to the root of our idea of what is right and what is wrong. But it's so embedded that we're not consciously aware of it, and we're not consciously questioning it. And so it ends up being that it's difficult for people to speak across culture, because it comes to the very essence of, at least to that person's perspective, it comes to the very essence of who they are, you know. And
mm-hmm.
so culture, mm-hmm. like, even when we try to talk across culture, there's this thing like we can have willpower and we can try to tell ourselves, like, I'm going to do this when I get in this situation. But usually culture is going to trump any amount of willpower. And I use that word. I said Trump. But anyway,
yeah.
culture is going to overcome willpower in most instances. But if you have an ideal, then that ideal can transform culture. So
mm-hmm.
for me,
mm-hmm.
growing up in that really interesting space of multiple cultures, it was a battle within myself for a long time, until I got to a point where I said, you know, what is my ideal, and what is the ideal of the way that I want to live in the world. And once I started to embrace that ideal, then I had to basically challenge my culture to conform to the ideal, instead of
okay.
minimizing my ideals to fit into the cultural box. You know what I mean?
Mm, I like that.
So
yeah,
That's pretty much been how I've been living for a long time. So like, even if I come across, like, I feel the same. Like, if I see somebody being ignorant, you know, it's not like I'm just gonna be like, peace be unto you, like, very easily all the time. It's
mm-hmm.
what I'm capable of doing is because I practiced it enough and failed at it enough, and, like, from my perspective, repented enough that I can go back and say, well, that's not my ideal. Like, I didn't live into my ideal today. I'm going to go back and, like, you know, imagine what it would have been like if I would have done it differently or done it better or whatever the case may be. And I'm just going to keep going back to it. Just like a person's trying to get better at a sport or better at an art or better at a language, I'm going to mess up, but I'm going to keep coming back, because my ideal is to be able to live fully into that promise. And for me, it's like, I try my best to follow what I believe to be the ways of Christ. So that's my ideal. So I keep coming back to that. So even if I do fail from that sometimes, I'm going to come back because that's still my ideal. So I won't say that my failure was right. I'll say, all right, yeah, I failed at living into my ideal, but you know what? I'm going to get back up. I'm going to give it another shot, you know?
Yeah.
So that,
And it seems like you...
Go ahead.
No, what I was going to say, it seems like because of your resolve that you find yourself in situations where you get to live out that which you proclaimed as being, you know, like your direction in life,
right.
Where you serve
right.
as a minister, you know, within your family and with your two daughters. And so
right.
It's interesting how we do that, you know.
Yeah.
We call it what it is,
yeah.
and then it shows us what it is, yeah. So.
Right. I'll tell you a funny story. Oh, it's not actually comically funny, but an interesting story anyway. You know, I was several times in my life I've been like really angry about some of the situations in the country and like people's almost seeming refusal to wake up in certain situations. And I sat down in a chair one day and I kind of meditated. I didn't know it was meditation at the time. At the time it was just sitting in a chair, but I sat in a chair and I just like, and this was coming out of my frustration and my anger. It wasn't anything benevolent about it at all. But I imagined myself going to Africa and warning Africans and saying, if you see some people come here and they look like this, like, I imagine I could go back in time and basically warn the Africans about Europeans coming and like all these other tragedies of the world, you know. And so that was my was younger and I was trying to, like, how could the world have been different if we didn't have all these, like, kind of interactions and there's all these painful things that come up out of, like, the legacy of slavery and stuff like that. And so I, like, started taking my mind there, doing this, like, thought experiment, like, what would it be like if I never had to deal with this, and what if, you know. So I was doing that, and my imagination kind of got away from me, and I imagined that the once I warned the people in Africa about the Europeans coming, instead of them saying, oh, okay, well, when they show up, we'll, you know, tell them, no, that's okay, or whatever the case may be, they got angry at the proposition that that ever would have occurred. And so they went to, in my imagination, they went to Europe and then, like, you know, went around and enslaved them, which obviously there's some things historically, you know, with the Ottoman Empire and stuff like that, that some of that actually did exist. But at the time, I didn't know any of these things. It was just this thing, awareness that, like, even if I tried to, like, even if the world changed the inner workings of the human spirit, if it's not making peace with, you know, all the differences and stuff like that, this same thing that we see is going to manifest itself in some other way until we change our inner reality. And I started, like, kind of becoming aware of that and said, you know what, I got to get this stuff out of me. You know what I mean? I can't just, like, want the world to be different all the time. I got to, like, really work on myself, you know? And so that's what I kind of have been doing. Right. And transforming that, like, the subject of transforming trauma.
And we have to, because we all have them, you know?
Right.
And sometimes we're not even aware that they're there, and we'll get into a situation and something will spark, you know, that little energy that we thought we had really kind of laid down way deep
right.
in our soul, never to be, you know, to come alive again. And
right.
here it is.
Exactly.
You know, so why do we do it? And so I think
right.
that how you wanted to address this, transforming emotional trauma, is so perfect, because we're at a time where not only do we have unresolved emotional traumas, we have current emotional traumas
right.
that we're dealing with, you know, with the current administration and how things are happening. And so, you know, there's one piece that you wrote, when the pain is too much, I write. Do you want me to read it, or do you want to just kind of tell the audience what it's about? How do you want to handle that?
I think they can take a break from my voice for a second and hear your voice read it, and then I can jump back in.
Let's see, I can listen to your voice all night long, but okay. When the pain is too much, I write. And this was posted on June 23rd by the Roofless Church. And you can obtain these blogs at that website. I write when I cannot take the pain anymore. The pain of trying to contain myself for the comfort of others. I have lived my entire life with pain. I learned early on that it cannot be avoided. In my experience, it is inevitable in this life. Suffering, however, is optional. Suffering comes when you do not know what to do with your pain. By God's grace, I know what to do with mine. When I feel the life leaving my body, I know I have to act. When what acting looks like to people is different. I write because writing saves my life. I write because once the words are out of me, I know that means my world is going to change. Once the words are out, there is no taking them back. Yes, I can edit them. I can censor them. I can even delete them. But once they are out, they are forever written on my heart, and there is nothing I could do ever to erase them. For you see, I see writing as a form of confession. I am confessing to myself that what I have written down is the best approximation of what I think and feel at the moment of their expression. That's why I take what I write very seriously. Today I am confessing that when I saw the most recent footage of Philando Castile being shot, I could feel my life trying to leave my body again. Out of my pain, I began to wonder what the white people who care about me would say if I were shot by a police officer while reaching for my ID. I wonder this every time it happens, but today I am choosing to express it. Furthermore, I wonder what some white Christians would say if it happens and the report said unarmed black minister, husband, and father shot dead by officers while praying for them. And if I ever am shot by a police officer, that is exactly what I'd be doing when they shot me, because I pray for every single police officer I see. I started this practice as a way to free myself from my own biases toward police officers. Like many black people, I have been stopped by the police many times. I have also had police officers say explicitly racist things to me. And when in the military, I had an officer make an insane confession to me about why he carries a second gun with him after trying to tell me how I was different, quote unquote. After a number of these experiences, I came to not trust officers, but my faith compelled me to give this feeling over to God and to use that reaction to police as a reminder that I need to pray more and grow closer to God, who I believe loves all people. To me, commitment to follow Jesus means being able to pray for those who might abuse you, even as he did for those who did him wrong. That being said, praying doesn't make it easier to deal with. Shoot, a lot of times it makes it harder. Maybe that is why so few people try it. Often I don't even bother trying to explain what it feels like to know that I live in a world where I am conscious that at any moment some person whose main sense of values come from the lie that they are inherently better than me can decide to express their rights on me until my right to live freely is revoked. Not that I feel like I have the right to live freely. How can I? I have never had that experience in this country. I think this acceptance is the one thing that has kept me from breaking under the constant psychological assault of being black in America. I do not believe that the unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness were ever meant to apply to me. If it was truly accepted by our society that these so-called rights are endowed by my Creator, then who could threaten them and who would want to? Yet all of my life I have been warned about and experienced the reality that I don't actually have these rights. At best, they are loaned to me by a predatory lender. The way I view the world, it seems to me that the people – do you want me to stop there?
Yeah, I think that's probably a good place to stop. That's right. And okay. You know, the Philando Castile thing, that, man, that tore me up something fierce. Really, I mean, on a lot of levels, but one of those levels was the awareness of the child that was in the car as well. That was just, you know, just tragic. And I thought about the times that I've been stopped with my oldest daughter in the car, and the couple times that I've been stopped with her in the car, she cried, like, "Don't arrest my daddy, don't do that," you know. And the police have just like kind of, it's usually I got stopped for something that was stupid anyway, so they just let me go.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, it has about three times, and you can see on their face when they saw her and heard her and saw her crying, like it was like, I don't know what their mindset was prior to stopping me, but I know that like once they saw her in the car and stuff like that, it was kind of like, it just kind of squashed it. And it just like kind of crushed my spirit a little bit. On one level, because that he was shot while the child was in the car, and that was just tragic, you know. On the other level was the awareness that I was subconsciously being protected by my daughter. Like I was, daughter was like kind of like a shield, but you know, subconsciously, I didn't realize I was thinking this, but that my daughter was a shield between me and police officers on a certain level, because when they saw her, it kind of would diffuse any potential thing I thought. But under that circumstance, that showed me like that even in the situation with my daughter in the car, someone could make this kind of like error. You know what I mean? And that just was like just very disheartening. And I know from doing like different social justice work and stuff like that, that there are a lot of people who, like, even though they might be well-intentioned and things like that, it's hard to imagine the amount of, when I say I've like always felt pain, I just have. I came to terms with it a long time ago, as I wrote that I don't really, I see like America, the idea of what America, some people think America is, I see it as like an ideal, like, you know, this ideal of where all people are created equal and just things like that, but we haven't gotten there yet. And I'm in one of the people in the group that's like kind of at the back end of the train, so to speak. You know, if history is a linear, if you look at history as a linear thing right now, I'm still at the back. I'm at the back of the train. You know, a lot of us are at the back of the train, even if it is going towards something. We're getting there after some other people. You know what I mean? The way that our society is kind of set up. And so if I tried to like get angry every time I encountered that, I'd be just wasting my energy. So I decided, you know what, I'm going to accept it for what it has presented itself to me as, and then I can, the energy that I can serve from not being angry, I can use to try to create some transformative experiences for myself and for other people who would like to do that, you know. But
and that's
it's something that,
you know, that's a very wise and mature way to look at things, and not all people, especially in your age group, not all people choose to look at it like that. They would, you know, some would prefer to be very militant and, you know, go into violence in order to, I guess, you know, fight a wrong that they see that's happening. And so that's why I said what I did at the beginning of the show, you know, like the whole way that you carry yourself and the way that you're teaching your children how to handle these situations are admirable, because not all people choose to do that. You know, they would, you know, I'm going to show you, you know, like how to fight back and, you know, and all of like that.
Right.
And so we kind of miss the using your intelligence to try and work through a situation. You know, because it's about brawn, you know, who's got the most muscle to hurt, you know, somebody else. So,
right. Well, one of my favorite
go ahead and finish that, and then we can take a break. Yeah,
I'll finish that statement. I was just going to say that one of my favorite scripture passages is from 2 Corinthians, and it's about the sufficiency of grace. And it says, you know, my grace is sufficient for you. When Paul tries to get out of his painful situation, he gets denied. And it says, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is perfected in weakness. And so then Paul says, therefore, I'd rather boast in my weaknesses so that the power of Christ might dwell in me. And that's the part of the walk that I'm trying to live. So we can talk a little bit more about that when we come back.
Okay, and we'll be right back, you guys. You're listening to Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. And tonight's program is Transforming Emotional Trauma with Minister Pedro Silva, who has just been on fire. But we're going to take a break so that we both can get some water, and we'll be right back.
Don't give a heck about the man of the Bible.
I was looking forward to.
Was Respect Yourself by Pop Staple and his daughters, the Staple Singers. A little oldie but goodie there. Welcome back to Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. So tonight we have with us Minister Pedro Silva, who's discussing transforming emotional traumas. And so Pedro has walked us through several situations and from his childhood up through even the latest incidents of last weekend, and was giving us his mature opinion of how to handle these different types of situations. So, audience, remember, you can chime in, ask questions at any time. If you're not already on the line with us, 516-531-9819. And you just press 1 to let me know you want to speak live on air. We are returning to Pedro, and there was another blog that you posted. I know you had, we're going to finish up what you had started before we took that short break. But I also want to talk about that blog that you did when your daughter asked you what. So if you could kind of touch on that and finish up your statement from before we move to break, I'd appreciate that.
Yeah, I think it's a way to, like, basically bring the two together. The scripture passage about God's strength being made perfect in my weakness, that when my daughter asked me that question, that brought up some of my weaknesses, my personal weaknesses. And one of the things that you mentioned earlier is that sometimes there's a trigger that will take you back to a trauma that you might have thought you overcame already, and then something shows up and you're like, what? I thought I was past that, you know? And my personal relationship with the N-word, I thought that as an individual, I had gotten to a point, I mean, I've been called it enough times, you know what I mean? Like, in growing up in several times in Mississippi, I've had some, like, interesting conversations with some people who felt that it was appropriate for them to, like, address me in that way. And, but I thought, like, I got to a point where I could just be like, if anybody comes at me like that, I know how to, just outthink them to some degree, because typically I would imagine that they're not thinking too much if they think that they can come at me like that. But then when my daughter brought it up, I said, wow. You know, I started thinking about her experiencing those words and other harmful words, and it took me to a place where it was a weakness for me. You know, I mean, I can take some things, but I can't take it happening to my child, you know, as any parent would feel. And so I had to really think about, okay, this is a teaching moment, and I want her to understand and be more empowered by this conversation and by this awareness than to feel diminished by it. And so I took my time. I read some things. I meditated about it. I checked out this movie. I watched this movie about Ruby Bridges, you know, and when she integrated the school in New Orleans. And I sat down and watched that with my daughter, and we talked about it, and we went deep with it. And then I took her back to Virginia so she spent some time with my family and feel some strong, you know, black experience, you know. Because I was fortunate. I actually grew up where I grew up in Virginia. I have, besides my family having a pretty strong sense of self, in 35th Street in Norfolk, Virginia, it's a largely black Muslim community. And I had the privilege of growing up around that a lot because my cousins are Muslim, and I spent a lot of time in that community going to the like African bookstore, and my aunt has a store where she sells like African products and different things like that. And so I had that depth, and I wanted my daughter to have to be able to spend some time in that so that when she encounters someone else's ignorance, she can transform or eradicate that ignorance with her knowledge, you know. And so that's what I have been doing with her. And she actually walked in on me when we were on the break and said, "Can I tell them what I do when someone is mean to me and tell them how I know I walk away and sit down and you know and try to give myself some space." Some of the things that I've tried to teach her, you know. And
you should have let her
God's
come
gracious
on and say that.
She said it, then she walked away. She said she wanted to say it, but then she walked away. So, but I can say that when I was very triggered when she asked me about that, because there's not that many black children in the school that she goes to, and so it's like the idea of her having to deal with that or anything was a rough idea for me. And as a parent, you know, and to have her, she's actually walking up right now. I'm sorry, but
okay.
Just that whole parental, you know, protective energy just kind of like surrounded me, and through my, you know, my ideals go out the window when I'm thinking about my child, and I had to do a lot of work to bring myself back into that, to that space. But I also find like peace from that scripture about God's grace being made sufficient in my weakness, mm-hmm. because when I encounter that, I'm saying, okay, I'm very weak right now, God, absolutely weak, and I need your strength to help me to move from this place to this other place, you know, and that I can boast in my weaknesses. And that's a mystery to the church, frankly, kind of sucks at talking about. There's a lot of spiritual food that, I mean, I'm not trying to be critical of the church, but it's like a lot of times I feel that we do not go deeper into the mysteries of some of these things because it doesn't make sense and is counterintuitive to the prevailing culture. And so we don't explore those mysteries with any depth. And so we can. That's why you got a lot of people that say that they're. And I'm not really picking on Christianity. Just that I identify as a Christian. I have more intimacy with Christianity, so that's why I'm using it as an example. But you see a lot of the people who are a lot of hate here saying that they're Christians. You know what I mean? And saying a person told me before, they said, you know, I'm tired of you pushing forgiveness down my throat. And which I didn't feel that I was pushing forgiveness down their throat, but they said, you know, my favorite scripture is the same as Mr. the president, said my favorite scriptures are an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. I'm like, did you skipped the whole Jesus part, didn't you?
He didn't learn that part.
Nah. He's like, what is this, like, all this forgiveness stuff you're pushing down my throat? I said, wow, I really have to come back to you on that one.
It's interesting that folks, you know, would look at it that you're trying to push something on them where obviously they were having a problem dealing with it, and you were just showing them a way to get around it. So,
I'll tell you, when after Philando Castile was shot, there was a, I should say it was murdered. There was a gathering, a candlelight vigil, some people out in a park around here. And they had, you know, some Black Lives Matter signs and they were reading off names of people that have been killed over the past few years. And they also were honoring, it wasn't divisive in any way. It also honored the police that were killed in Texas and some other things as well. So it was like kind of like a space for people to kind of grieve for the state of the nation. But then there was an individual that just came there and was like, you know, very angry. And he was yelling, Blue Lives Matter, Blue Lives Matter. And saying, you know, when we would say the names of individuals that were shot by the police, he would yell out thug and all this other stuff. And some people, you know, I mean, rightly so, they were angry and about it. And in my inner person, you know, there was that initial sense of like, you know, I feel like I might want to react. But one of the things I tried to institute in myself is to count before I do anything. Like if I start feeling something, I'll like count to 10 or something like that. And like just really pause and try to make some space. And so I was doing that. And then I said, okay, let me look at this guy. Now, clearly, this is not the place for what he's displaying, but why is he doing this? And then I started thinking about it, and I was like, I think he's just afraid, you know. And then I ended up saying to him, I said, look, I know you're scared right now, but this, what you're doing isn't effective. It doesn't make sense. And then he was like, I'm not scared. And he went back and forth about how he wasn't afraid. And he still kept saying, like, Blue Lives Matter, all these thugs, these are thugs that got killed and things like that. And people were getting angry, and you know, some people were trying to aggressively, you know, intimidate him to leave. And I just kept saying, look, sir, I know you're afraid. I know you're scared. And he kept saying, I'm not scared. And I said, I know you're scared. You are scared. And he kept saying, no, I'm not. And I said, and I kept saying, yes, you are. And we went back and forth like that for like, I don't even know how long, several minutes. But I just kept saying, I know you're afraid. And then eventually he just said, why do you keep saying I'm afraid? And then I said, because I've been afraid before, and I had that same look on my face. And then he just got quiet. And then he got quiet after that. And then like a little bit of time passed, and he started mumbling instead of saying the same thing he was saying loudly. He kind of mumbled it under his breath, and then he stopped. And then he actually started having conversations with people like, why do you think like this? Now, why do you think like that? And then I ended up leaving eventually. But it was like God's grace again, you know, and through my experience with my own weakness helped me to recognize the weakness in someone else. And then I tried to offer that space to him that I allowed myself to have, you know, and, you know, in that particular case, it worked out. But the main thing is the awareness that God's, from my perspective, God's strength enters in those spaces where we feel the most vulnerable. But we have to be able to accept that vulnerability. Yeah. So.
And it's so important, you know, like you're talking about, you know, transforming those traumas. And if you would not have the mind frame to keep with him, about accepting what he was truly experiencing in that now moment, you know, it could have turned out
mm-hmm.
Where everybody would have missed the lesson in it, you know. So
mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's not the easiest thing to stand and to, you know, to insist that someone deals with what they're going through. So, that may have been a little risky, you know, and maybe not everybody could do it, but you were able to do it because of who you are and how you deal in the world. And so we each got to find our own way to handle those
mm-hmm.
type of situations. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, my uncle, who's a pastor also, he told me, he said, you know, every time you go through something in life, it's like it's not just about you and it's not just for you. It's also for
right.
people that you're going to encounter in your journey, you know, and you're going to meet people
mm-hmm.
and they're going to remind you of something you've been through. And if you can be there for that person, it's transformative for you and it can be transformative for them. And so it's like everything that we've ever done, every error, every anything, when we like give that over, I believe that it can be redeemable, you know, even if it's like, you know, just like it doesn't matter what it is. It's like once we allow for ourselves to just be like, hey, man, this is where I was and be honest with ourselves, it's redeemable, you know. But it's like we
right,
have to first
right.
be able to like look ourselves in the mirror. Yeah. Yeah, and it's not just about race stuff and things like that. It's like all sorts of trauma. I mean, I have some other experiences, but it, like they're transferable to anybody because all of us have been through something. You know, all of us have been through some kind of pain, some kind of, you know, regret, some kind of loss. You know, but it's not just like how they teach in 12-step and like AA and stuff like that. It's when
right.
you like kind of help other people in their recovery that you are blessed too. You know,
because of your life experiences, you know, because you're assistant pastor and your congregation is what, 90-95% Caucasian?
Yeah.
Or
yep.
Is it higher than that? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah, it's probably higher. Yeah. yeah. And it, that's an interesting space to find myself in as well, and to just come there and still be authentic, you know, and to say like this is where I'm coming from and this is, you know, this is a part like all of our stories. From my perspective, all of our stories are intertwined. You know, it's like they're
uh-huh.
they all are, but we have to be willing to just kind of go there, you know,
exactly.
And then once we go there, then some of those differences peel back, you know, and you say, oh, okay, actually, I might not be able to relate to this person on a whole bunch of certain levels, but I can relate to them on this one level, like if the person, like, lost a child or something like that, or if they were in the military, or if they were raised by a single parent, or they were poor, or if, you know, just, like, all these different things, and if we can just, like, you know, put ourselves out there and then be invitational, like I was saying, I hope that this conversation is, then we can find these places to connect. And it's just, I've seen too many amazing things by handing over that trauma and allowing it to be transformed to not continue in that effort, you know?
Mm.
And some,
mm-hmm.
and some of it's been devastating, you know? Some things have been devastating.
Yeah.
I don't know if I told you this, but the reason why I even moved to Atlanta, I moved to Atlanta because I was trying to live in a place where the irony of all things is at the time when I went to Atlanta, I was escaping to Atlanta. I was trying to go there to just like be around like 99% black people. You know what I mean? That's why I went there. And then the irony of my life, the image, the way my life is showing up right now is the complete opposite of what my actual
exactly.
goal was at that time.
Right.
But it would have never happened if
right.
I didn't go to Atlanta. If I just stayed in Virginia, it'd be, you know, so it's like, and sometimes you run from something and it just ends up, that's what ends up showing up in your life, you know? What
yeah,
you
because
resist,
you take
persist,
it with you. That's,
you know?
That's what I always laugh about, you know, so you never
yeah.
run away. If you don't
nope.
leave it where you're leaving, you know, you just packed neatly away in your suitcase. It's right there with you all the time. So,
right.
But
it's the
traumas that go unchecked, and
mm-hmm.
So are you suggesting to the audience that we just need to take an honest look at what those traumas are, what emotions that they elicit in us as we reliving perhaps the trauma
mm-hmm.
in some totally unrelated way? How do we go about transforming those traumas so that they are healthier for us as we come out of the experience of remembering them?
Yeah, I mean, I think that for me anyway, it goes back to that same scripture and just like addressing it. And it doesn't have to be like through a Christian lens or whatever the case may be. It's just the coming into contact and saying, you know what, I've hit my wall. You know, I've hit my wall of trying to do this on my own. I've come to the end of my rope. Like whether it's I've spent time with people and lived with people with addiction, and it's not until they acknowledge the fact that they hit that wall, you know, that the transformation can begin. And so it's like for me, if I hit my wall, I'm honest about it, you know, and I say, okay, look, I thought that I was capable of this. I'm at the end of it. I need to ask for help, you know, in whatever form that it might come, and then receive that help. And then I obviously just admit to myself that if I don't have the ability, I need to trust somebody. You know what I mean? And a lot
right,
of us,
right.
we have this lie in America about self-sufficiency, you know, mm-hmm. you're taking yourself up, straps, all this other stuff that doesn't not even real in my mind, where someone can come into this world and they can just do everything on their own, handle everything on their own, just cover everything on their own. It's an illusion. What happens is that when people have that illusion, whenever they fail, it hits them so hard. You know, they feel like a success and they feel like it's so hard to give up and they don't want to try. But the reality is that none of us are sufficient unto ourselves. You know, it doesn't matter. Like a person can come up with an invention, but they still need people to buy it. You know, they need people to manufacture it. But we come up with these illusions and we make these like little mini gods in our minds of ourselves or of other people. And it really just robs us of our own opportunity to transform, you know, and to take those what are seeming failures and allow those things to become jumping off points, you know. And my path of it is just starting off with the fact that I'm a fail. Like when I make mistakes with my children, when I make a mistake of trying to raise them an ideal, I come back and I say, you know what, you know, if I told my daughter, like, I don't do this, but, you know, say for example, she's makes a mistake and like she wrote on a wall, you know, and it took her a long time. Like she wrote on a wall way past the age where you would think somebody would write on a wall, you know, all those
mm-hmm.
years she never did it. And then my wife
right.
called and she said, can you believe she wrote on a wall? And I said, about time, you know, because that's just like a learning opportunity. But also like if I would have reacted and said, oh, you messed up this wall, you know, I could really have harmed her, you know, create some trauma if I just went off on her without explaining to her why that's not the appropriate thing to do, you know. And
right.
if I did do
right.
that, I would have to come back and say, look, you know, daddy made a mistake. I reacted. I shouldn't have reacted. Why did you feel like it was the right thing to write on a wall? Do you need some paper? You know what I'm saying? And
right.
And allow both of us to learn from that. And every time I try to come back and hey, you know, if she tells me like, hey, dad, you're not doing what you tell me I should do, I'm like, yep, you know what? You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
You have a way
of reminding
us, yes.
Yep, and I say you're right. You know, how can I do better? Sit down with me. Let's talk about how I can do better. Let's pray. You know. And just take all the little opportunities and allow them to be opportunities to grow. And it's not really that hard. Yeah. We make mistakes all the time. It's just changing our mind on those mistakes.
Right, because, you know, I've been around some parents that they know that they're inappropriate or they've missed the mark or they're wrong, however you want to word it. And for the life of them, they were like, but that's my child. I shouldn't have to apologize to them. I'm like, oh, that's so cruel. Why wouldn't you? If, you know, so you would rather for your child to believe a lie than to, you know, for you to admit something that you made a mistake. Because we all miss the mark. You know, none of us are 100% perfect where we never make a mistake. But some parents are like that, you know. And I'm sure a lot of the listeners are probably aware of that, too, you know, coming up of age when a child was supposed to be seen and never heard. And then, you know, there comes a time when you get into trouble and they were like, well, tell us what's wrong, you know. So, but you didn't told me to shut up all my life and now you want me to start talking, you know. So it's a no-win situation. So I'm really glad that you're treating your relationship with your daughter differently, you know, and having that open discussion, because that's what children need, you know, in this world, not just, you know, in this day and age, but in this world, period. We need to have open communication between each other, you know.
Well, I mean, another thing that my tradition teaches in Christianity, my understanding of Christianity, I'm not going to try to claim it all for myself, but it says, like, you know, if you don't enter the kingdom as a child, you're not going to enter it at all. You know what I mean? And I'm not just talking about like a heavenly kingdom or like, a, you know, afterlife kingdom, but the actually heavenly mindset or that consciousness, that kingdom consciousness as a child. And so if I can't even like sit down with my child and learn from her, then I'm getting further from that same consciousness that I'm saying that I'm trying to attain. And at some level, she's closer to that consciousness than I am. She's just not as capable of articulating it for someone else. But her residence, her spiritual residence right now is closer to that kingdom than most adults, you know, because she's still operating from that realm, you know what I mean? And so I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to learn from you and with you so we can both stay closer to this kingdom as possible, this consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So,
they say kids, the younger that they are, they haven't lost their innocence. You know, they haven't lost their connection, and they know they just came from God. You know what I'm saying? And it's like as we get older and more sophisticated and more worldly and educated, you know, we start forgetting all of that. You know, but it takes a child to bring us back around to who we really are. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And one of the things I learned from being a parent, and it's actually magnified my ability to be compassionate like 1,000-fold, is that every single person on this planet started off as a baby, you know? They started off as an innocent child who was close to God, and then they met, you know, they came into this world, you know, and all of us are struggling, and obviously, there's accountability that has to be. There has to be some accountability. Otherwise, it's like people could just say, "Well, hey, you know, this happened to me, so I'm doing it to you." But I think that the accountability, to a larger degree, at least from my perspective, is on the people who acknowledge that they're on a spiritual journey, acknowledge on their spiritual path. You know what I mean? It's because somebody's caught up. It's like, well, they're caught up. What are you going to really do? But if someone has decided that they're going to try to take some responsibility for their life and for their spiritual awareness and things like that, then, you know, I hold myself accountable. You know, if some racist person comes up to me and does something to me, I'm not going to say, maybe I might do something I don't intend to do, but I'm going to hold myself accountable because I'm the one that says that I have that ideal. And that's one of the things that's frustrating me right now and it's given me a lot to work on with myself is how so many people use their spiritual tradition as a justification for acting like jerks. You know what I mean?
Right.
And saying, and it's like, you know, I don't try to tell people like exactly like, oh, that's not what the religion says. That's not what your religion says or whatever. Cause it's not, if that's that person's interpretation, that's their interpretation. But some things are just not, they're not debatable. Like you can disagree. You can say, I don't want to follow it or whatever the case may be, but it's still, there's just still certain things that have certain guys. For example, I'm just going to try to use an analogy. Like if you say, I want to bake a cake, and they say, okay, well, to bake a cake, this got certain ingredients, you need a stove. If you can say, yeah, I'm baking a cake, but I don't want to use any of the ingredients, I don't want to use a stove, you know what I mean? As you can still
right,
tell yourself
right.
You're baking a cake, but that's not what's going to come out. And the person who who's using the instructions and following it and like using the ingredients, you're gonna see when it's time to eat, whether they come up with a cake or they come up with some mess, you know. And some of the people they come up with some mess and then try to tell you it's a cake.
But not all churches are teaching though, Pedro. You know, not all houses of worship are. Going to instruct their congregation to study for themselves, let alone, you know, come with any type of lesson plan. You know, they get up, the Christian churches that I'm accustomed to being in, you know, you got the hollering and the screaming going on, and as long as that's going, you know, especially in the South, then people are like, oh, service was so good. I'm like, really, what did you learn? They don't know what they learned. It was because it was so
right.
much emotion involved in it. And so when that happens, a person don't even know they need a stove and all of these ingredients to make a cake because they've never really been taught. You know what I'm saying? They just wish for a cake, you know, get on your knees and pray for a cake, and it's going to manifest, you know. So our houses of worship do lack a lot in helping people to understand the true power that they have, you know, that sacred communion, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I can't disagree. I can say that there's I do believe that there's a place for that too. But I also think that the person is accountable to their decision, regardless of the pastor or the whatever the case may be. It's like, because I mean, I grew up with, you know, people were, a lot of times with hollering and different things like that. And, you know, sometimes you need to holler. Sometimes you need to shout. You need to get that emotion out because it's pent up. You've been at work all week. You can't express yourself. You got a lot of pain. You know, your relationship is falling apart and you need some help. You need to get that stuff out of you. But then, after that, I would say that the person, it's on that person to acknowledge that they're the ones that chose to walk in the church. You know what I mean? They're the ones that made that decision and said, I need my life to be transformed. And if you come to that
right.
point where it's not happening in the church anymore, it's time to get out, you know? And a lot of times, like a lot of pastors, I don't know if they would say that, but I think like I've had people say, oh, you know, they come to my church. Talk to me about church, and I'll say, I'll be honest with them. I'll say, hey, just understand that's just not a place.
You breaking up?
I was saying that sometimes I will be honest with a person and tell them if they're looking for a certain thing, maybe our church isn't the place for them. They're all welcome.
Oh, okay.
But like if they say,
right.
everybody's welcome, but everybody's also on their spiritual journey, and they have to take responsibility for that. You know, and a lot of times, like, we don't take responsibility for our own path. Like, we look for the pastor to do it, like, we're going to get it through some kind
exactly.
of osmosis or something like that. And that's just
right.
not how it is, you know.
But, you know, we're such a lazy society, you know, the media and all the other little trickeries with the electronics
mm-hmm.
and all of like that. We don't
mm-hmm.
think for ourselves anymore. You know, we allow everybody else to think for us. And so if it's not taught at the church, you know, that you need to go home and study the Bible for yourself and come back and let's have a discussion about it, you know, then they just want to hear whatever the pastor's going to say to them, and that's going to be their lesson for the week, you know. So, but I
right.
get where you're coming from, and I totally agree with you. you know, that everybody is responsible for their own walk in life, and it's no one else's, not the priest or the rabbi or the imam or the pastor or anybody that's, you know,
right,
sitting in the front, but it's each person's responsibility to make sure that they're getting what they need and to grow and to learn on their own. So,
mm-hmm,
but I'm just saying it don't happen all the time because people are waiting for somebody else to do it for them.
Right. Yeah. No, I've been in that situation. I've been asked to leave a church because my experience was different than the pastor's experience. And I said, hey, you know, he's entitled to his experience and I have my experience. And I'm not saying
right,
he can't have his experience. And they said, you know, you're not a pastor. Why don't you get out?
Wow.
You know,
wow,
that's it. Okay. Well, I respect that. I'm going to go ahead and get out. And my initial reaction to that was not healthy. Like, my initial reaction was I got angry and, you know, mad at everybody and mad at God and all this other stuff. And then God, like, you know, broke me down and said, hey, that was your decision. It was your decision to do this, your decision to do that. And then I had to, like, make peace with that, you know, and say, okay, well, let me go a little deeper, you know, and allow for that transformation to happen.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, that can be a hard thing to follow, you know, that you created everything that's showing up in your life. You know, what you talking about?
Right.
This happened to me. I didn't create it.
Right.
We're getting down to our last few moments on the show. So we've got about 5 minutes or so left. And
mm-hmm,
I just want to thank you for being with us. And I wish your daughter would have come on and said something, but I understand. And I do want to let the audience know that we received another ancestor during the radio program. Sal DeRosa made his transition while we were having our radio program tonight. So we pray for the family. And, So Pedro's blogs can be found at theruthlesschurch.com. And so do you need the HTTPS in front of that? That's what I have.
No, if you just type the ruthless, like ROOFLESS, THEROOFLESS church.com, it'll just take you straight to the posts.
Okay, okay. And so you post you post when the spirit moves you, right?
Right, yeah, totally. It's totally on that. When I'm feeling led, I got plenty that I've written and never posted because I just realized it was for me to kind of get that out of my system, but not to, like, put it on anybody else. And then I share what I feel led to be. I edify other people, then I'll share it.
Yeah, but it's so thought-provoking. I mean, every time that I have to sit and to read with a clear mind and quietness around me and read your post, it always transformed me into another place in time, either to allow traumas to be healed and released or, you know, just a memory that brings a smile on my face. So I love your posts. They're always more than just a blog or just a post. You have so much of you that is transposed up on a piece of paper. I just absolutely love your writing style and the thoughts and the actions that you don't really ask, but they're like in the blog. You know, like, what are you doing with your life, kind of sort of thing. So I love that about
right,
how you write. So, yeah, I truly appreciate you, Pedro, and I wish the best. I pray for the best for you and your family, your wife, and your two daughters. And I know that you're making an indelible impression upon the people that you come in contact with, and you're serving as an excellent example for your daughter, your daughters, because the baby's going to be grown in a little or no time. Time goes so fast.
Right, exactly.
And I appreciate you for taking time away from your family to be with us tonight. And you have just shared so much of who you are with us. I thoroughly appreciate you.
Yeah, and I wanted to say how much I appreciate you too, because like when I encountered you for the first time in Atlanta, like I just knew we were going to end up staying in touch, because sometimes you just meet a person and you know. And I just felt like my soul was like, oh yeah, I know her, you know. And it's not a small thing. Like I said before, the way that you allow yourself to like publicly grow and be transformed, and to like allow all the elements of who you are to have a place inside of you. And I think that that's what so many of us are struggling to do. And the fact that you do that and you create this platform for other people, it's a gift. That's what I say. It's a gift.
Well, thank you.
I appreciate that.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we've had a ball tonight, and anytime you want to come back on, just let me know. The door is always open for you. And I know that it has been truly, truly a blessing to have you with us, for you to share your thoughts. And I know the audience were just mesmerized by the comments, and they didn't. They were like, we're not going to interrupt his flow. We're going to let him do what he's doing. So we thank you. We thank you sincerely.
Yeah, thank you.
And
well,
for, yes, and for the audience, you know, as always, I love you and I bless you, and I appreciate you for being with us on a continuous basis and supporting Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. And as always, I wish you the best, and I hope that this coming week is the best that you've ever experienced in your life. And so until next Tuesday, we will see you and pray that everything is working to your benefit and that your life is being transformed with newness and blessings and peace, love, and harmony. We'll see you next week, everybody. Good night.
Good night.